Now, critical appreciation of sons and lovers are distinctive features of the novel, a masterpiece. It was with the publication of Sons and Lovers in 1913 that Lawrence suddenly shot into fame. It is assuredly his most balanced work and one of the masterpieces of English fiction. Lawrence himself considered it a great work. He wrote to his friend Edward Garnett about the novel. "I tell you, I have written a great book. Read my novel. It is a great novel." And posterity has indulged his judgment. Since its publication more than 50 years ago, the novel has received more critical attentions than almost any other novel of the 20th century, with the exception of Ulysses. Autobiographical note. Sons and Lovers is an autobiographical novel, as autobiographical as Burnett's Cliffhanger and the first half of Dickens' David Copperfield. Its setting is the mining district, the Lawrence County, Eastwood, which the novelist knew so well as he had been bred and brought up in it. It is the story of Midland miner's son, Paul Morrell, who is Lawrence himself. Walter Morrell and Mrs. Morrell are the father and mother of the novelist, the father an unrefined miner and the mother with refinement and culture, a superior woman. The conflict between Mr. and Mrs. Morrell and the reactions of the children are all transcripts from life. Miriam is Jesse Chambers, whom he met early in life, whom he loved but with whom he failed, like Paul, to establish satisfactory relations owing largely to the influence of his mother on him. His mother, too, died of cancer, like Mrs. Morrell, the mother of Paul, and his brother Ernest Lawrence, too, died early in life. Like William in the story, however, we must remember that a novel is primarily a work of art, and even when it is based on the personal experiences of the writer, it is not a faithful reproduction of the facts of life. The facts of life undergo a process of imaginative selection and ordering, and the whole experience has to be reorganized and shaped for the purpose of art. And that is what Lawrence has done in his most autobiographical of his novels. It was for this reason that Jesse Chambers was shocked when The Sons and Lovers was published in its final form. She complained that justice had not been done to her, that the whole Paul Miriam affair presented her in an unfavorable light, and that the laurels of victory had been given to Mrs. Morrell. She gave her own version to the whole affair. She might be factfully true, but she was certainly mistaken in taking a novel to an autobiography. Lawrence had created a work of art, and he was well within his right to organize and interpret the facts in accordance with requirements of art. Besides this, he was departed from reality in another important respect also. While Lawrence married Freda Weekly, the other woman, after the death of his mother, and lived comfortably with her, Paul fails to reach a satisfactory adjustment even with Clara, the other woman in the novel, and does not marry her. Moreover, after the death of his mother, he goes out towards the city, a derelict probably to die. Mother fixation. Middleton Murray, in his clever study of his friend, and emphasized that owing to what is called mother fixation, Lawrence was never able to make a happy emotional adjustment with other women. Lawrence was a tortured soul throughout the full 45 years of his life, and what he suffered and what he thought and observed under the stimulus of suffering can very well be guessed from a study of The Sons and Lovers. And this is so because the novel is primarily a story of mother fixation, as Graham Hogg puts it. Sons and Lovers is doubtlessly the first Freudian novel in English. Paul's love for Miriam is a desperate attempt to the himself from the excessive attachment to his mother. He cannot give to Miriam what he has already given to his mother, and thus results the terrible and torturing conflict within him, and the disharmony between him and the woman who wants all his love, and to whom he can give but half. It is the dark side of the mother image that comes between Paul's relations with Miriam and spoils that relationship. Paul is conscious of the damaging influence of his mother on him and tells her bitterly, "I shall never meet the right woman as long as you are living." Sex conflict. Lawrence sees human relationships essentially in terms of a conflict. The battle of the sexes is the central theme of Lawrence's novels, and in Sons and Lovers, it takes the form of a conflict between the mother and Miriam for the soul of Paul. Paul is aware of his need for both of them, but can give himself wholly to neither of them. The result is intense and heartbreaking suffering. In the latter part of the novel, the conflict between Miriam and Mrs. Morrell is replaced by the conflict between Miriam and Clara. Unable to reach satisfactory relationship with Miriam, Paul turns to Clara, but this relationship is as unsatisfying as the previous one. Clara can give him only physical love, just as Miriam could give only spiritual passion. But man is both body and soul, and both must be satisfied. Law of law of pluralization. Lawrence was an explorer of human relationship, and in this novel he has studied sex relationship from different angles. Mr. Morrell and Miriam are both wrong in being too possessive. Both of them want to possess the soul of Paul. Satisfactory relationship results only when we recognize the otherness of other individuals. Clara also is wrong, for she too is over possessive as far as the body of Paul is concerned. She disgusts him with her constant lovemaking and kissing, even in daytime and the office. Successful polarization would have resulted had this woman recognized that Paul was a separate identity with a separate soul of his own, which can reach fulfillment in its own way. Mrs. Morrell failed to recognize this truth, not only with reference to Paul, but also with reference to other members of her family. She destroyed her husband in her efforts to reform him. She talked religion and philosophy to him and did not respect his essentially sensual and physical nature. Similarly, she destroyed his eldest son, William, by coming in the way of his relationship with other women. Money relationships, a reflection of the life of miners. There is no doubt that the central theme of the novel is Oedipal. But too much talk about mother fixation has blinded the critics of two other important aspects of the novel. For example, it is not merely an exploration of sex relationships, but also of money relationships. This aspect of human relationship has been emphasized from the very beginning. Mrs. Morrell is first disillusioned with her husband because he lied to her about the furniture and the house, and become the bills remained unpaid. The grinding poverty of a miner's life and Morrell's habit of careless spending in the pub go to a long way towards the final casting of Morrell, and William is taken on as he becomes an earning member of the family. Indeed, the two sons, first William and then Paul, replace Morrell as a breadwinner and the head of the family, as well as in the affection of their mother. Almost simultaneously, the economic side of life is constantly kept in mind, and even trivial financial details are noted and described. In times of crisis, death or sickness, the novelist is careful to show us how the mining community extends itself help and sympathy. Mrs. Morrell fights as bravely against poverty as she does her psychological battles. In Sons and Lovers, Lawrence is realistic enough to recognize that sex may be important, but is not the whole of life. Money has its own value and significance and contributes a lot to human happiness and welfare. Human relationships are vitiated as much by sex conflicts and inhibitions as by poverty and financial conflicts. A great social novel. John Raymond is perfectly right when he says of Sons and Lovers, in its first half, at least it is a great social novel, a great proletarian novel, even as an epic, an allegory of industry encroaching on the countryman. Morrell's pit and the levers cause it. Mr. Pappleworth, the butler, the work girls in Jordan's manufactory, Paul going out to collect his father's wages, the father himself drinking at the pub or coming home after an accident, Mrs. Morrell drudging away her life and saving every penny for the approaching confinement, all these and many more are the various aspects of the grimness, sordidness, misery and dreariness of industrialization, which was fast overtaking agricultural England. Lawrence knew his England, and he knew that the merry England of the past was running down. Already, we are told, Paul was a prisoner of industrialism. Already, his heart went down. He was being taken into bondage. His freedom in the beloved home valley was going now. However, the process is not yet complete. All is not yet lost. The miner still retains his love of beauty. Walter Morel still goes out with his friend for long 10-mile walks. He still enjoys the beauty of nature, especially the beauty of flowers. Sons and Lovers is rich in beautiful passages describing the beauty of nature. It is a novel striven all over with flowers. The novel thus represents a striking contrast between the fast rising ugliness of industrialized England and the beauty and freshness of the old England undergoing process of rapid decay. A novel about class. Sons and Lovers is a great novel about class. It deals with the poor rather than with the middle class. Himself a miner's son, Lawrence was quite familiar with their sufferings, their sensibility, their sense of dignity and self-respect, their essential goodness despite their ragged, unrefined manners and appearance, their simple joys and sorrows, and all this knowledge he has used to great advantage in this novel. Paul's words to his mother strike the key note of the novel. Because the difference between people is not in their class, but in themselves. Only from the middle class one gets ideas, and from the common people life itself warmth. You feel their hats and loves. The novel reflects Lawrence's love and understanding of the common people at every step. They are more sympathetic and have a greater sense of fellow feeling than the people of middle or upper classes. During Mrs. Morel's confinement, the entire neighborhood comes out with the help and services. When Morel is sick, the whole community rises to the occasion. When William dies, all share the grief of the family. The poor are self-respecting and have a keen sense of appearance. Goodness knows what sort of state his feet were in, cries Mrs. Morel, back from seeing her husband in the hospital. He is very particular to wash himself to the waist, but below he thinks does not matter. The poor hate the army. When Arthur enlists, the family is heartbroken. A soldier, a common soldier, nothing but a body that makes movements when it hears a shout. And the old miner wishes that his son may never set his foot again in his home. The moment of life itself. In his excellent history of the English novel, Walter Allen compares Clayhanger and Sons and Lovers and emphasizes another important aspect of the novel. The novelist captures, he says, the moment of life itself. Both in men and women in the physical world of nature, it is this moment of life itself that makes Sons and Lovers the undeniably great book that it is. It is charged with the burden of life, weighted down, like at Lawrence's best writing, with the pressure of living things, trees, flowers, animals, men and women. One cannot open any page of the novel without coming across some pages or sentence that pulsates with the moment of life, marking the rhythm of the existence. It is the very shimmer of life, the shimmering protoplasm that we get from him. And it is the sheer urgency of his writing that brings us into intimacy for him. Life quivers and surges in everything around him. His words seem hot and quivering on the page, pulsating with life, so to stay. Thus, in the wonderful first chapter of the second part of the novel, we experience Lawrence writing at its interest. It's most impressionistic. He has the trick of the impressionist, the trick of catching light and air and water and jumbling them harmoniously together. The result is the whole of the chapter entitled Lad and Girl Love is like some unending monet, landscape, wooded, rippling, steepled in shadow and sunlight. Traditional and modern elements. And this brings us to consideration of the technique used in the Sons and Lovers. It is a great transitional novel. It begins as a traditional 19th century novel and ends as a modern one. At least in its first part, there is a straightforward narrative, a well-knit plot, and recognizable characters drawn from the outside in the round as well as realized emotionally. Denial. The novel is also traditional in its use of the convention of the omniscient author to summarize the action and to direct our attention to its significance with a fullness and frankness which recalls George Eliot. However, his comments are rarely intrusive, They do not inflict upon the readers the philosophy and morality of the author. Thus, the novel strikes a modern note in being entirely free from moral didactism. Whatever moral or philosophy there is, we get through the dialogue between the characters and never through authorial comments, as was the case with the Victorians like Thackeray and others. This modernism of the novel is also seen in its free and frank treatment of sex relationships, the archetypal nature of the mother-son relationship depicted in this book is attested not only by the findings of psychoanalysis but also by the innumerable novels of the past 50 years which have dealt explicitly with the same basic situations. The novel is also modern in having a crippled hero, in the emotional sense at least, though weak physical as well, one who is a victim rather than an agent. Description of nature. The novel is rich in descriptions of nature and of the non-human world. There is a lyrical quality about his nature descriptions. Lawrence gives one the impression that he rejoices in the life of nature. He never tires of descriptions of birds, flowers, animals, trees, and the natural surroundings. Sons and Lovers contains detailed account of the countryside of his youth, the hills, the valleys, the woods and fields, the smoke-filled and ugly atmosphere of the mines. With loving care, he describes the beauty of the lily dancing in the moonlight, the rose bush, the enchanted Miriam, the life on the farm, the shrieking of the ash tree, the life of the willy farm. Some of the descriptions of the sunrise and the sunset bear the mark of the genuine observation. The sun was going down every open evening. The hills of Derbyshire were blazed over with the red sunset. Mrs. Morel watched the sun sink from the glistening sky, leaving a soft flower blue overhead, while the western space went red as if all the fire had swum down there, leaving the bell cast flawless blue. The mountain ash berries across the field stood fairly out from the dark leaves. Use of imagery and symbols. The texture of the novel is enriched by the use of image and symbols, which help us to grasp the experience offered. To quote Miss Van Ghent, perhaps in no other novel do we find the image so largely replacing episode and discursive analysis and taking over the expressive functions of these as it does in Lawrence. We are made aware of the feelings of the characters through some highly evocative images. For instance, the fear of the children that their father might do harm to their mother is identified with the shrieking of the ash tree. They lay with their heart in the grip of an intense anguish. The wind came through the tree fiercer and fiercer. All the chords of the great harp hummed, whistled and shrieked. And then came the horror of the sudden silence. Was it a silence of blood? What had he done? Associated with Walter Morel are images of darkness, which suggests the dark, unknown, instinctive side of life. The most significant use of the image is seen in the scene when Mrs. Morel, locked out of the house by her husband, is wandering in the moonlight outside. Herself scared with passion, she suddenly becomes conscious of the life force asserting itself in the dance of lilies in the white light. She finds herself helpless before the every power against which she revels, for moonlight here is equated with the phallic power. Miriam's diffidence in feeding the hen is symbolic of her frigidity. One can quote examples after examples to show Lawrence's masterly use of the image. Impressionism, its technique. However, the modernism of the novel is best seen in its use of impressionistic technique for narration and character delineations. There is no plot in the conventional sense. There are no intrigues, no mysteries, no long lost years, and no mistake. Identities, etc. The novel does not follow the ordinary chronological sequence of most of the 19th century fiction, but uses a freer and more intro, introspective form. The narration moves freely backward and forward in time. Even as early as chapter 3, there is constant alternation between the panoramic view of the larger community and the close-up of the moral family, and this technique provides the essential structure patterns of the novel and replaces the traditional narrative's structure of ordinary sequence in time. In characterization 2, the interest shifts from the external to the internal. The tangle of emotions and sensations in which Paul is enmeshed, weariness, hopelessness, possessive love, etc. Like a modern novelist, he tries to express psyche or soul of Paul, and since the resources of the ordinary language, however rich, are not sufficient expressive for the purpose, extensive use is made of highly suggestive symbols. Thus, the swing at Willy form is a symbol of the touch and go Paul Miriam relationship. Some limitations. However, it cannot be denied that some weakness enter towards the end of the novel. Between them, Miriam, the child wife, and Clara, the other woman plays havoc with the novel, much as Dora and Agnes spoil the latter part of David Copperfield. Baxter does not play any significant part in the novel, and one feels that too much of his space has been devoted to him. The novel has a tendency to drag on in the last few chapters, despite the powerful death scene of Mrs. Morrell. One of the most powerful in the whole range of English novel. As Mrs. Morrell dies, we are told Paul is left to begin a new life, without the only thing that held him up, herself, amid all this. He goes out towards the gold phosphorescent of the city, but we cannot say for certain whether he goes there to live or to die. Ambiguity surrounds the fate of the tragic hero. A great work of art. The novel has been called Broken Backed in that the first part and the second are insufficiently related. It has also been called needlessly repetitive. However, such a view results from an erroneous reading of the novel. The conflict between the parents is relevant as conditioning the emotional growth of Paul, and the destiny of the son is rooted in the fate of the father. Disappointed in the father, the mother turns to the son and makes him a husband substitute. Further, the dead son's William's story is not merely a superfluous repetition, but a prelude to the understanding of Paul's predicament. Thus, the two parts are closely interlinked, and the novel cannot be called wasp-like or broken-backed. As a matter of fact, the novel has organic unity. This organic unity or wholeness arises from the fact that it depicts life, the very process of living realistically and convincingly. The novel may have its faults. We may not agree with the philosophy of Lawrence, but there can be no denying the fact that the reading of it is a rich and satisfying experience, and that is the real test of the worth of a work of art.